Welcome to the Packet Pushers Podcast, another installment from our visit to Barcelona, where we are at HP Discover 2014, and we're talking about wireless today. We've got some Wi-Fi guys sitting in front of us, technical people and engineering folks who are going to, we're going to get into location awareness and some of the special services that you can do in the HP world. Let's start by going around the table and talking to the folks assembled. First up, Greg, you're back again.
No, this is my front.
It is.
Yeah, my back's around there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Again. Just like that. Yeah. You really are a bit punchy this morning, aren't you?
So, this morning I woke up at 8:30 as intended.
Uh-huh.
The next thing I knew, an hour had gone by, and it's like, I think I'm supposed to be downstairs in the lobby.
There's nothing like email to take you away.
It was terrible.
There's nothing like coming halfway around the world to do your email, is there?
And then we get over here, and I come upstairs, and it's like, it's all been a fog. The jet lag is finally catching up to me, even though I slept well last night. It's all very odd.
I've always thought your brain was just full of fog.
That's not very nice at all. No, I'm sad that you
I'm getting
that.
Punchy now. No, I'm like, hey, yeah. You're not up for it. I'm ready to go. Hey,
also with us is Mr. Chris Young.
This is really amusing. You're loving this jet lag thing in the other direction, aren't you?
Yeah, because you've seen it the other way, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
You normally see me with the ones with the foggy head.
So, at NetmanChris on Twitter. This chair is getting comfortable.
Comfortable.
It's molded to my butt at this point of the week. Technical marketing engineer with HP Networking, focused on network management, and wireless needs to be managed too. So, happy to be back.
Uh-huh. Yarnin
Israel. Technical marketing engineer, focused on wireless as well.
Very good. And Shobek?
I'm a senior researcher at HP Labs, and jet lag is good. It puts you on a high. We're always on high.
I think he gets to sleep in and not do those 7:30 calls.
Yeah.
It's this coffee in front of me that I hope is going to put me on a high. We'll see how that works
out. Is there something
out.
In the water here that this conference has actually got all of your people from the research labs out of that? Is there something broken somewhere that let them all out? They normally don't let them out of the corral.
I will tell you, I kind of stole the key.
You did.
Yeah. So you're not giving it back.
This is great, because normally we end up with, not normally, but often we end up with people who are purely sales. And we've had some really interesting conversations in the last couple of days, like with Sue Dart, who's in the research part, and those types of people. It's been really great.
And now you guys have got some really interesting research that you've been doing on the Wi-Fi side. So let's start off here by a kind of level setting. There's several different wireless products in the HP set. Which Wi-Fi product set are we talking about in this show?
So at this point, we're looking for the location-aware capabilities and being able to monetize your wireless infrastructure. We're looking at the Comware set of products, so the 850s, the 870s, the 830s, and the access points that go along with them, so from the 425 to the 460s, the 560s, the 517s, all the sets of access points and controllers that are part of the Comware line.
And the big thing here being Comware.
Yes.
And this is an operating system distinctive that for folks that are not in the HP ecosystem, that is across several different products in the line. There's switches that run Comware, there's routers, and there's wireless, and...
Absolutely, and the real benefit there, again, from a network management, because that's what I care about, is it's consistent instrumentation across the entire product line, right? So, and that's across the Comware-based product line. I'll be specific about that one. So it's really nice when you can go to the same CLI on your wireless, on your routers, on your edge switches, on your core switches, on your data center switches, and actually have, I know this is going to shock you, consistent behavior.
Yeah.
It's something that we're not kind of used to in a lot of the networking world.
Yeah, and that's been a gradual migration for HP over time, is to get Comware consistent across all the products, and that's starting to be delivered.
Absolutely.
All right, which is good, because we talked like a couple of years ago about this, and you were saying it's going to get there. And
there's still definitely other products from more of what I would call the PVOS, the ProVision heritage, which are great products, and they will continue for the time being to have the ProVision legacy OS, because there's a lot of great stuff in there. That's where OpenFlow came from, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're obviously not going to get rid of any of those assets. They're amazing products. But for other classes of customers, it's possible to go all HP branded end-to-end and have that consistent
and have a Comware operating system on your device that's the same and consistent across the thing.
That's one of our biggest strengths. There are not a lot of companies in the market today that can deliver an end-to-end solution, from the core to the edge, like we can.
Yeah, well, so if you're listening and you haven't listened to every single show, we have done shows this week on the branch routers and the campus switches.
Yes.
We talked with Sue Darte about that. And then we talked to...
Sue Dart.
Yeah.
Heather Giovanni.
Now, Heather Giovanni talking about, you know, how those products in the campus are able to do all those sorts of things. So, yeah, you're right, you know. Those things aren't often well understood. When I talk to, you know, our listeners and our audience about what they know about HPE networking, they don't necessarily know that HPE's got routers for the branch, routers and switches for the campus that are a lot of people using the old ProCurve models. Well, that's what they call them. So, you know, what do you call them? ProVision?
ProVision, yeah.
Yeah, is the operating system.
Yep.
They're familiar with those, but they don't necessarily realize that you've got the full-on campus switching range. And there's a Wi-Fi. So we're talking today about the Wi-Fi solution that attaches to that.
Right.
Now, the products themselves, let's just very quickly go over it. You've got the full range of antennas as well as the base station. So we're talking about, you know, gigabit Wi-Fi, modular antenna designs, or is it structural? Is it, you know, is there a wide range of products?
At this point, HP is more focused, or our main business is indoors.
Yep.
We're a bit limited on the outdoor section when it comes to access points.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're looking at the portfolio for access points, we do everything from indoor wall mounts to high-end, high-capacity, high-throughput access points that goes into high-density environments.
So that would be enterprise wireless. You're focusing on enterprise wireless? Is that fair?
Yes.
Yeah. You're not trying to be all wireless, just enterprise wireless.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so full range of products there and that type of thing. As an aside, here's a question for
you. When you say enterprise, I mean also it goes into hospitalities, for example. The wall mounts will definitely go
indoor
into
use. You're not doing carrier Wi-Fi.
You're implying high density as well. I think you said that. You say hospital, I think high density. Immediately, tons of wireless in that space.
Correct.
Going into big environments.
We're actually looking now, even at HP, into building offices that are Wi-Fi based alone.
Mm.
We're losing the wire.
Yay! Yeah. Sorry.
You have reference designs for those?
It's a dream come true.
You have reference designs for those sorts of things?
We're building them right now, so we're in the initial stages of creating the first ones. So as we learn as we go, and of course, as the standards progress, moving from AC Wave 1 to AC Wave 2, which will bring the biggest, you know, features or change the game, where we'll be able to serve multiple clients at the same time. You know, at this point, wireless is acting more of a hub-like environment where only one client can access the medium into an environment where it's switch-like, where multiple clients can use the medium, right? That is the big game changer that will come with AC Wave 2, and that will create a huge boost in capabilities for all deployments, especially for high-density, high-throughput deployments. And as you probably know, the capacities that are being required from our networks today are growing fast.
Yeah, people expect to get gigabit on Wi-Fi because they're getting gigabit to the desktop.
They expect to get the same experience as they get from a wired network.
Well, I've heard that described, you know, the gigabit speeds for Wi-Fi, you know, and what AC can give you. It's really an issue, maybe not so much of the amount of data you're shoveling through that wire, but just the number of clients that are on and getting people on and off the air very quickly.
You're hitting the right spot here. Because of the way the standard acts, as I said, we're serving a single client. I mean, when I use a single client with a three streams capabilities on an access point using AC, which is supposed to deliver theoretical 1.3 gigabit, right?
Right.
80 megahertz channel. I can actually push, I've seen it, I've pushed 990 megs. So I'm getting very close to the edge of the capabilities of the port itself.
Yes.
Right? But when I start adding clients, because I need to now switch between clients, right? And that takes time, which will reduce the overall capacity. Now, if I'll add 5-6 clients, I'm dropping down dramatically from 900, almost a gig.
Yeah, the process of moving from one radio speaking to another radio speaking, just that switching process adds time.
Correct. Yeah. That time is crucial because in that time I'm not transmitting data, which at the end of the day translate to a big decrease in overall throughput.
Yeah. That's one of the complexities of wireless, is that throughput is hard to sustain when you're moving. If you're not moving, it's a little, theoretically, your Wi-Fi should hold you static and your transfer should work well.
And that's true. And on top of that, because the environment is very dynamic, even if I'm not mobile, right, the environment is very dynamic.
So what you're referring to there is radio spectrum itself could be congested with signals coming in from other, you know,
those
sidebands coming off radios.
And those watering bags of water we call people.
Yeah.
Those water bags who walk all over the place.
That's why
right?
I refer to wireless as voodoo.
Kind of black magic, yes. But obviously, even the position of the sun during the day, right, affects the RF propagation.
Yep.
So all of these parameters, which you cannot account for, you cannot always account for them, you know, in your deployment.
They vary on quasi-random basis.
Correct.
Yeah.
They will always influence the transmit rates that you're working on.
Yeah.
The phases of the antennas on your client device compared to the phase of the antennas on the access points will also...
And the age of your client devices. You know, you've got to have the right antenna chipset and the drivers on the chipset determine
your throughput.
There you go,
the drivers. Yes.
And it can be even simple things like, you know, if you've got a 10-year-old laptop, you're going to get really bad Wi-Fi because the standards have iterated so fast. Mm. So you need to be considering about what... You know.
Luckily, what we've seen so far is that... And I think it's a given, and it goes across all technologies and all fields. As technology progress, right, you get better radios, more sensitive equipment,
and better antennas.
Correct.
We're getting antennas to be able to, you know, throw focus a signal across a horizontal plane.
Right.
You know,
and they're more sensitive. Yep. Therefore, they can account for, you know, harsher RF conditions. Mm-hmm. So even if I'll deploy an AC access point, right, into an N deployment, right, where most of my clients are N, I'll see an increase in performance, which accounts for almost 30%, right? So it's the actual radios that are better and the chipsets that are better that were implemented into those access points that account for those increase in performance.
So that's an interesting question. So if I'm an enterprise and I've got an existing Wi-Fi setup and I'm saying to you, I'm just extending it, right, I just want to add some more, tell me what I could buy, would I be better advised to actually throw out my old stuff? As a rough rule, right, are you better advised to actually replace your older stuff and get the newer stuff because it's significantly better? Is that a general rule of thumb?
So, you know, in a theoretical world, you know, where money is not an issue, right, I would always recommend, replace everything as fast as you can, always stay with the latest version of everything, right?
Yep, sure.
It's a given, but we live in a...
Yeah, I'm saying sort of as a rough rule of thumb.
World,
you've got Wi-Fi, say, I'm trying to think of sort of like a rough rule of thumb, which is something like, you know, if your Wi-Fi base station is more than 5 years old, you probably should replace it because you're going to get significant advantages in the internal hardware.
Right.
You're going to get better antennas, better silicon. The software is going to have better digital signal processing engines that can discriminate the actual coherent signal from the incoherent noise you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know, all that sort of stuff.
Lower power utilization on the APs.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's all this stuff goes into it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But since, you know, as I said, you will hit the limit of, you know, budget and
yeah, of course. Yeah.
So... another way of looking at it would be, you know what, let's create islands.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that you can maintain your end deployment, right? And in areas where there is a need for high capacity, high throughput, or high density.
So you're saying end deployment, you mean 802.11n?
Yes.
Which is the existing 5 gigahertz.
God forbid you're still running on G.
Yeah.
Right, if you're running
it
on
works.
G, I'm sorry. It does. Yeah. But, well, we all know the limitation of G. Right.
Yeah,
single stream, only 20 megahertz.
Yeah,
it is what it is, and it was back good in the day.
It's the transition. It builds. It's like, you know, it's like.
So if you're a G and you need to deploy again, I would highly recommend go with AC right now. If you already have an N deployment, right, and you are seeing areas where you're facing some difficulties in throughput and capacity and high densities, create these islands of AC.
Yeah.
And now when it comes to AC, you need to think about it. Do you want to go with the Ferrari's kind of access point, which will support 3 streams?
Yep.
Or you want to go with a bit cheaper access point, will support 2 streams? And that is something that is a lot of the time being overlooked.
Okay, let's quickly talk about the 3 streams. So my recollection of 802.11 AC is that you can have what's called MIMO, which is multi-channel, effectively. And in the spectrum that was allocated, the 5.4 gigahertz spectrum which is allocated, a laptop or a phone will only use one set of spectrum. And there's 3 channels of spectrum you can use. Is that right?
So, not exactly.
Sure.
The introduction of MIMO was first introduced with 802.11n.
Mm-hmm.
2011, if I'm not mistaken, right? And in the standard, they declared how many streams are supported.
Yep.
And I think with N it was 4, but we never got to see any access points or clients that ended up supporting 4 streams.
Yep.
Now with 802.11ac, the standard declares that it will support up to 8.
Right.
Once again, we do not believe or we do not foresee at this point in time, access points and clients that will support more than four.
So that means a client would transmit simultaneously over four wireless channels to the base station?
It is the same frequency. It is using the same band, but there's a shift.
Yeah, phase shift. Phase shift keying.
Correct. Yep. And it's a totally different set of data that is being transmitted.
Okay.
It sounds kind of like DWDM in a piece of fiber where you can have multiple streams of light going down the glass, just depending on what color the light is.
Yes, it's very similar.
In this case, the data is all for one set of data going between client and
but the end result is like your Wi-Fi thing is transmitting on four Ethernet cables that are lagged together.
Kind of, at this point, we don't have four.
It's like a parallel stream. So if you had a desktop with four 1-gig ports, or four 100 megs or whatever.
In order for us to maintain, utilization of multiple streams, the RF conditions needs to be good.
Yep.
Now, when the RF conditions deteriorates, we're decreasing the number of streams.
Right.
So instead of having four people talking to you at the same time and you're able to hear them all, and interpret what they're saying, if there is a lot of crowd in the room, a lot of noise, you can't really interpret what they're saying, so we'll say, let's turn off two of them and let's stick with two streams. I can hear two people.
And you'll balance the throughput.
Correctly.
And just to get the best possible result.
So each stream is doubling what we had before. So if you're using one or you're using two, it's a 100% increase. So you had a third one, it's a 30% increase,
With all of this throughput that we're getting out of these access points now, are we still tunneling everything from the access points back to the controller?
It is up to you to decide. I mean, if you look at the history of how things started, you see that initially there were only access points, and they would dump everything on the wire, and that was it, Then came the controllers.
Mm-hmm.
And the controller added a lot of features and capabilities that were not implemented before or were not able to push onto the access points because they were just not strong enough. And so that controllers became beefier and beefier, with more and more features that were built into them.
Right.
All traffic was tunneled back in. At a certain point in time, we got to a position where, it is adding a lot of latency. It is adding, it's basically the bottleneck,
It was all right when the Wi-Fi was 10 gig, 10 meg.
Yes.
Even 50 meg. But when you've got gigabit Wi-Fi, if you've got,
you
got 500
have
laptops and 20% of them communicating at gigabit,
in an enterprise that's spread out over a WAN, and you may have a controller back at headquarters, access points back in a remote office across the WAN, you don't necessarily want to tunnel everything back to headquarters.
So that is called centralized, That architecture is called centralized,
very much,
where you're holding everything back.
Yes.
It still, in all honesty, the controllers are the strongest entity in the deployment, so a lot of the features are still hosted by the controller.
Mm.
Some enterprises or some deployments do not require all these features, or they trust the clients, so they say, we trust the information that is being run by the employees,
We perform authentication, we authorize them, connect to the network.
And once they're there, we know what's on their devices, It's a company COE that they're running on.
Mm.
Then it's okay for us to drop the data on the wire.
Right.
So for me, it's a design choice, It's really what it comes down to. And the things that we have to start thinking about, for the people usually who think about a data center standpoint, this tunneling back to the controller, this is the vMotion with storage, traffic tromboning thing. It's the exact same thing. So you end up, it's not just a bandwidth, it's twice the bandwidth because we have these distributed APs in different branches sometimes, centralized controller. You have to go all the way back and come all the way back through again.
Mm.
Combined with the fact that a lot of campuses haven't gone 10 gig, because the wired clients weren't using it, so now we have to look at oversubscription ratios.
Yep.
So you got this to worry about. And then you got the fun of, I don't have a centralized policy point anymore where I can do things like apply ACLs or apply different treatment in a single way and go slam. All wireless is treated like this. So now we have to start thinking about distributed policy and how that works.
Because a lot of people used to bring their Wi-Fi back to the central point and then run it through an IDS.
Yes,
so they had security policies built around, I know I've done this.
Or guest access that doesn't even go through an IDS. It just gets dropped off at the internet and forced the VPN back through.
I've done exactly that too.
Actually,
into a VLAN and all they get is internet access via basically a DMZ and a firewall.
We used to always run the guest stuff through an IDS because we needed to see what was happening on the guest and stuff. But anyway.
We just shunt them to the internet and not care.
Make them come back through the VPN and policy is.
And the latest stage is the cloud.
Yep.
Where you don't really have a controller anymore,
Mm.
It's just a manager. And everything is being done on
these
the access points.
These are the cloud managed Wi-Fi solutions where so the Wi-Fi wakes up, connects off over the internet to a central point.
Right, and you don't hold the traffic back.
No.
Now, as the stronger the access points become, the beefier the chipsets and the memories on them, right, we are able to push these decision-making points further away from the core of the network, right? In a general rule, you know, the further away you push the decision-making point from the core, the smarter the system becomes.
Yeah, you lose. It's a trade-off. It's always a balance, right? It scales better. The closer you put policy towards the edge of the network, the greater your scale becomes. The more granular your pricing becomes because you buy just the piece of equipment to do what you need. You don't need one. You know, like
exactly.
The old days of the controller was. You know, 70% of the purchase of a wireless system was the controller.
And less, and you get less failure points.
Yes, and you end up with a few Wi-Fi's that you know. And you're always trying to balance. How do I need the very big, the huge, or the ginormous controller? And you're wasting it. You've got to find.
Yeah, there you go.
And you had to find all the money up front. Whereas if you're just buying a, you know, if your intelligence is in the access point, you're stepping your scalability of your Wi-Fi network from there, and that's much.
So we're
now called business value right there.
We're now looking at a point where the access points can actually do the DPI, the deep packet inspection. So a layer 7 firewalls are applied on the access points,
right?
Instead of doing it on the controller,
right? Hmm. Or in an external device.
Boy, that sounds an awful lot like the virtualization world, doesn't it? Let's take all our firewalls, virtualize them, shove them out to the edge. No more central firewalls. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
very much.
I can live with that.
There's nothing new in this concept, obviously, right? It's being used throughout most fields.
Well, you know, virtualization is about getting policy into the hypervisor.
Yeah,
getting network
word.
Policy.
I just love that word.
Yeah. Which one?
Hypervisor.
One more wireless geeky question I wanted to ask you before we start getting into the location awareness stuff, but that is, you had mentioned 802.11ac, wave 1 versus wave 2. And you said Wave 2 is all about getting multiple users on the air at the same time. Can you give that an explanation of that?
Yes. Well, Wave 2 will bring a bit more than that. But in my opinion, and it's my humble opinion, that this is the game changer. This is something that everybody were looking and waiting for. The ability to have MU-MIMO, what we call MU-MIMO, multi-user MIMO. Mm-hmm. Meaning that now I can serve multiple clients and the rule is, and Suvi can explain even better than I can because he taught me everything I know about this, is the rule is N minus 1, N being the number of transmit elements that you have on your access point. So if we have an access point that supports 4 streams, right, 4 transmit elements,
yep.
The number of clients that I can serve at the same time would be 3. So N, the number of antennas or transmit element, minus 1. And the fourth element will be trying or creating a mask that will kind of cancel the other 3 streams, or 2, basically. So if I'll be talking to you, the fourth element will be masking the other 2, and we'll be doing the same thing for them when they're listening. It's it's very complex. It's we have not seen it happen or in production yet because we don't have the chipsets yet. But this is how it is described in the standard.
Savita, did you want to jump in there and talk more about it?
So basically, MU-MIMO, it's an extension of the MIMO concept. Right? So in the MIMO world, what we did was we had multiple antennas. Let's say we have 3 antennas. And we said, if you have 3 antennas, you're a client and you have 3 antennas, I can send 3 different packets on each of the antennas to you. And you get 3 packets at once. That improves your performance. Now, that was in 802.11n. The problem with that concept was it works with laptop. Everyone has 3 antennas. Phones have 1 antenna, right? Some phones are coming up with 2 antennas, but really, most phones have 1 antenna.
Oh, they can't reuse more than one.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Can't. Some of the more modern, very recent phones can do.
It's consuming a lot of power, right?
Yeah.
And power, battery, is the most precious resource that you have on mobile devices.
Yes.
Right.
So if you think about like Apple devices, for example, they didn't update 802.11ac or dual antenna things until very recently because power is a very precious thing on the mobile devices, right? So now we have this capability of MIMO, which was in 802.11n, but then it's only helping the laptops or the multi-antenna folks, right? It doesn't really help the true mobile devices. Now, AC, basically what it says that if you can transmit 3 different packets simultaneously on 3 antennas to one client, why cannot you do that to multiple clients?
I got it. Okay.
So each packet goes to different clients, right? So I transmit one to Greg, I transmit one to Ethan, and one to Yanni, mm-hmm. and not three packets to Yanni. Now you'll ask, okay, why is it better, like throughput wise, right? You are before you're transmitting three packets at once, and then now you're transmitting one packet to different people. The reason is, in the MIMO world, when I'm talking to one person, when I talk to the next person, I have to basically, you know, I have a setup cost, right? I have to basically...
The switching we were talking about.
The switching cost. Exactly. Yeah. Right? Here, you have a switching cost, which is, of course, there is a switching cost, but it's only like, you can think about that three times switching cost becomes like one time switching cost. Mm-hmm. So initially, you figure out, okay, where these people are, what their channel conditions are like, and then you talk to three of them simultaneously. So the switching cost goes down a lot. Mm. That is one. Second thing is, many of the applications don't even need three packets at the same time. In the MIMO world, a client is going to benefit from three packets, right? Three simultaneous packets, only if the bandwidth requirement is very high for the application that the client is running. But like, I mean, really, I mean, unless you're watching a video, why do you need, you know, like a 40 megabit per second or 50 megabit per second stream?
Right.
Yeah. So in reality, most of the time, everywhere, you will see low bandwidth applications,
yeah.
But they want guarantees, as in like low latency. Right?
Yeah.
So it will be like low to medium bandwidth and low latency. And this MIMO concept of sending one packet to one client, but then serving three of them or four of them in parallel is perfect fit for that.
Yeah.
Right? And that is what the general world is in some sense.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why it has taken so long is because it's very, very complicated to implement.
Mm-hmm.
So in the MIMO world, if I want to send three packets to you, let's say on three different antennas, I need to understand the channel of these three antennas and the three antennas only to that one client. So it's like nine different channels. It's like each transmit and receive antenna pair.
Right, so each sender can talk to each of the receivers. So one.
Right.
So you've got one sending antenna, three possible receiving antennas.
Right.
So, of course, you've got three sending, so you've got nine possible
path
choices. Yeah.
But that's only one client for MIMO. So it's slightly easier.
Mm-hmm.
In the MIMO world, now you have three different clients. So first, I need to talk to you to figure out what your channel is.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have to talk to Yanni. Then I have to talk to Ethan. Right? And that is what adds the complexity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the case of MIMO, the receiver is the same client, right?
Yep.
So you as a receiver who is receiving these three packets, you are the same client.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do a lot of things in the hardware to cancel the noise because you are receiving those signals.
Yeah, because you're actually receiving the noise on three antennas. You can then say, I can see the same noise on all three antennas. Filter out the coherent from the incoherent and then mix them together and say...
In the MIMO world, these are three different people and they don't want to have any idea about each other. These receivers don't have any really ideas about each other because these are different signals coming.
Mm-hmm.
So now, therefore, it becomes the duty of the transmitter to transmit in such a way so that the noise of one particular person or the interference of one particular person's data doesn't hurt the other person. Right? And that is why most of the implementation, you need this fourth antenna. So if you want three packets to three different clients, you use this fourth antenna to try to kill the interference to these three different...
To detect the interference and then shift it 180 degrees out of phase and then cancel it.
Yeah, it sounds very similar to noise cancelling technology.
Exactly.
And
very similar to noise cancellation. But then you got to understand that you only have one stream that needs to cancel three other streams.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is why
it
becomes
problem, right?
It becomes very it becomes difficult because now depending on if these three streams or these three different clients are kind of like, let's say they kind of have different kind of channels, then it's easy to cancel because you know channels are different, they're uncorrelated, and hence you can create a signal which is going to like you know cancel them altogether.
Sure.
But let's say they have like very similar channel or, you know, it's not really related to each other, that kind of stuff, then it becomes very, very difficult. So client grouping, for example, is one of the biggest problems in MIMO. And we have seen, like, in research community, for example, there are a lot of papers which talks about if you don't do client grouping correctly, you will better not use MIMO.
Mm-hmm.
You are actually better doing, like, a single stream.
Okay.
So what's the timeline for Wave 2 then? Because it said it's research, not even chipsets out yet.
It is our estimate that you will start seeing access points closer to the mid-year, mid-2015.
Oh, that soon? Okay.
Yes.
I mean, we're talking eight months out.
You got to remember that in order to utilize these features, the MIMO, the beamforming that are coming with AC Wave 2, you got to have clients that support
it. So it's, right, okay, so clients as well.
Yes, if the clients don't support these capabilities, then I can't use regular AC clients or end clients, right, and then benefit from these features.
Okay, so let's move into something that you guys as HP have deployed today. You've got some pretty interesting location awareness technology that you've built on top of your wireless platform. So first of all, let's talk about the basics. What is location awareness?
So location awareness is nothing new, all right? I mean, most of us carry smartphones and have been using Google Maps, Waze, whatever applications that allow us to communicate or find our location. But this is always being done outdoor. How often have you walked into a new shopping mall, a new office space, and opened your phone and it's like, okay, where is that conference room? Where is that printer located? Where is that store in that mall?
Sure, yeah.
Right? And the
you lose the that blue dot doesn't follow you around. Typically, you're outside, it's GPS, and that's
right.
How you get your signal.
Exactly.
GPS signal fades out, can't triangulate you very well inside at all, unless you're near a window, maybe you get lucky.
Right.
But it loses track of you in the building.
Correct.
And so now we're turning to Wi-Fi to position you in the building.
Right. And so people started to look for solutions, other solutions, right, other than GPS because of the penetration of the signal from the birds.
Mm. Yeah.
And why not use Wi-Fi? Mm-hmm. It is widely available. It's here to stay. Not only that it is here to stay, it's growing rapidly, right? Now, maybe you guys remember, but 2008, 2009, before the GPS chipsets were built into our smartphone, we were still able to get our location within 10 to 15 meters, right? And everybody's like, wow, this is great. Mm-hmm. And how was that done? It was triangulation from the cell towers, right?
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're doing the same thing, and everybody's doing the same thing. It is not something that is new. We're basically triangulating your location by information that is coming from multiple access points.
So you look at the signal that's being received. You've got multiple access points in a physical building. You know, you don't have just one.
Obviously.
So, and you can detect the signal coming from two or three of them. You can detect the signal strength and extrapolate the distance, and then you can mathematically calculate where you are related to the...
Correct.
The base stations.
Now, here comes the limitation.
Yep.
Remember those 10 to 15 meters accuracy that you mm-hmm. would receive with the cellular towers, right?
Well, it's because you had the GPS coordinates of the towers, too.
No, but before that, you didn't have even a GPS chipset,
true.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the accuracy that you could have gotten from the triangulation that came from the cell towers.
Yep.
Now, that's fine when you're looking at, you know, a large environment where, like the outdoors, right?
Yep.
10 meters, close
pretty
enough,
good.
I know
yeah.
where I'm at, right?
Yeah.
But now that we're scaling down into buildings and offices, right,
mm-hmm.
10 to 15 meters, that's not good enough,
mm-hmm.
right? And this is the starting point for all location services solutions that are based on Wi-Fi.
Sure.
And it's not good enough. So the guys in HP Labs, Suvik, they came up with a solution that nobody else was able to pull off.
Mm-hmm.
And that brought us into the vicinity of 2 meters with 802.11n access points, which we think is great.
Yep.
And it will be even reduced further down to half a meter when we'll be using the 560 or the AC access points.
And that's two meters and down now
in
three dimensions?
Down. Yes.
In three dimensions. Because we got multi-level
yes,
office
yes,
buildings
right, course,
and all
yes,
that.
Yeah, of course.
Because
so,
you
yeah.
need to know which floor you're on
right.
in the building, tracking you as you move around as well as...
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the reason we're able to reduce, or should I say increase the accuracy, is because of the processing speeds that have been increased on the access point. So the faster the processor, the more iteration I can do, right? The faster the calculations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Translate to a higher accuracy. Now, competitors in the market will also come around and say, hey, you know what, we can pull 2 meters. We can do it.
Mm.
And they're right. They can. But the biggest differentiator between HP's solution and the solution that came from HP Labs compared to our competition is that they require something that we don't. And it's kind of, you know, scratching your left ear with your right hand.
Which you just did very well.
That was impressive.
But I got to tell you, it's not comfortable. and that's their solution. It's not comfortable. Yeah. And I'll tell you, and I say why. In order for other solution to reach that level of accuracy that we're bringing to the table, they need to be engaged in a process that is called calibration. Mm-hmm. And so they start off with a 10 to 15 meter accuracy, right? And then they'll send someone into that environment and they'll tell him, all right, I want you to stand in that corner, right, where I know where you're at. Now they'll look at what the system says, that this is the person location, the client location, right? And then they'll calibrate it. They'll tell the system, you know what, no, he's
somebody
not really
there
here.
Somebody goes there with a Wi-Fi device with a GPS in it.
Correct.
And then they walk around and say, this is what, click at this instant in time. But now I can instantly see what's going to go wrong here. 10 minutes later, the RF spectrum's changed. Or there's, you know...
Yep, once again, you hit it on the
meat
on the
bags,
head.
You know, human meat bags walking around interfering with the signal. Or somebody changes the roofing in the building.
Right.
Or they apply a, you know, the glass. They suddenly hang a poster on the wall and the RF penetration changes.
Right, the propagation of the RF is something very dynamic.
Yeah.
So we want location accuracy without this calibration process.
Right. Now, this calibration process...
Not to mention the operational cost of actually having to send someone there to do that work.
And it's
just
not,
to begin with.
And it's not a one-time thing. You've got to be engaged constantly with that process, which is labor-intensive. And
calibrating and recalibrating.
And recalibrating again. Mm-hmm. Once you stop calibrating, you fall back to the 10 to 15 meters.
Okay, so the magic here within this HP solution is you have very accurate location awareness without calibration.
Right, which is done dynamically.
Okay. Okay, so that's 2 meter accuracy today and even tighter.
Tighter whenever you upgrade to an AC product.
Okay. What are the use cases for location awareness? Some of them we've talked about, they seem a little
endless.
Freaky and evil. You know, the marketing stuff. I walk into a retail store and they know what I'm looking at. And maybe they even correlate that data with what I've bought before because I've been at the store. And so on. It all seems a little very minority report.
They're short on toilet paper. Three aisles to the right.
Yeah. That's right.
We have a great deal.
I know what would happen to me. I'd walk into a clothing store and I'd say, you are the most boring middle-aged man. Find the most boring jeans down here on the back. Straight fit. Blue. You know.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
I'm right
Bell's
there with
going,
you.
I'm sorry, this store is too hip for you.
That would be hysterical. You were in the wrong store. This is not boring middle-aged man store.
So the application...
Are you undergoing a midlife crisis? Please contact the psychologist.
Leather jeans to the right.
Hey, that's a valid marketing, you know. Proposition here.
That's the sort of thing LinkedIn would do.
So the features and capabilities and things that can come with this solution are, I mean, we're just starting to scratch the surface on what is possible. From the very basics of just presenting you information when you enter the office space, you know, how to get to the conference room, where to find a printer, right? To just learning about walking patterns of customers in your store, so you'll know where to position the merchandise that you would like to sell, right? To much more advanced features such as you said, you know, targeted advertisement.
Well, targeted and intelligent advertisement for customers who opt in with an app, let's say, for their favorite store, that can then that app can pass data back and forth between the store in real time while they're in the store.
Right, and that and once again, this varies between regions because of regulation. I mean, in the U.S., for example, you're opt in by default for everything. You go to the U.K., you're opt out. There are obviously ways to go around it. You know, you gotta accept the licensing agreement and. So forth.
Yep. But it's amazing what we'll do for free wireless.
Yes. Now, that's only, you know, a portion of what can be done. We can utilize it for increasing the capabilities of radio resource management. I know where the access points are. I know information about it. You know, I'm getting feedback from the clients. It can help me there.
Everything we do these days is analytics driven. Marketing
there
people are trying to be data driven. And what they're trying to do is... You know, even in the business that we're in, which is podcasting, we're not very analytics heavy because inevitably everything we do is anonymous, right? People have to be open and free to download the podcast on RSS. RSS has no way of tracking. But we still can see trails of data, or what they call a data exhaust. We see your source IP. We know your client tells us what operating system you're on and things like that. This is really, there's two ways it could go. As a, your company could choose to be, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn, intrusive, and just violate your privacy, you know, rampantly, and just steal everything that it can to try and exploit as you as much as possible. Or your employer could be reasonable and, you know, find a way to tread a line which is morally acceptable, but also meets the business goals to maximize their revenue opportunity. And that's, you know, that's not an argument that we can have here.
No, we're just giving you the capabilities, and you need to decide how far you want to push the the envelope.
Yeah, so there is. So I'll go back a little bit in history, and that will probably keep us, put us in more context about the use cases. So when Wi-Fi based positioning, for example, people have been trying it for years. So if you go back, like, I think there has been some startups early in the 2000s. And people try to use the same kind of triangulation as Yarnin was mentioning. You know, it's very difficult to do with Wi-Fi, right? So there has been startups, like there has been big corporations who are trying to do it on the phone. Right? So you have an app on the phone, you have sensors on the phone. You may be able to use those sensors to find where people are. When we started this project at HP Labs, we basically said that we don't want to restrict ourselves to a phone scenario, or we don't want to restrict ourselves with a special software, special hardware, or any such scenarios. Because what will happen is, if you do that, then maybe we can only enable like a retail analytics use case. You, if you have the app on the phone, then only I can track you, then only I can send you advertisement. But I will not be able to, let's say, track a patient in the hospital, and if the patient really requires help, I cannot locate him and I cannot send him. So when we started this project, we said, let's solve this difficult problem. Let's not, you know, go around and try to use sensors and all that, because if we can solve this with Wi-Fi, we can enable a huge amount of use cases.
Yeah, I can imagine a hospital where they give you a, you know, they, when you check in, they give you the plastic strip and they write your name on it and your date of birth, which is like your identifier. And I'm going like, you know, welcome to the 1920s, you know. And if they could just put an RF, a very low powered Wi-Fi, which is just transmitting a, you know, not data, but a, you know.
Beacons. I'm actually excited about, you know, sticking some Wi-Fi in my kid's pants and playing hide and go seek. that's something I can get behind. You sit on the couch and go, you're in the closet. You're downstairs. I'd be like magic.
I mean, there's any number of applications for it. But, you know, so what about, the interesting part about this is, once we've got the location, so we talked about the technology that tracks people, what about the analytics platform that extracts value from the data? So once I know I can track any person, whether they've opted in or opted in by default, or you know, whatever. So what do I do to turn that into useful information? Because, you know, CIOs aren't very good at, you know, they need to see it in color charts and graphs.
I think there are two ways to look at it, right? So if you think about use cases, how can you use this technology? The same people, like, we can put ourselves in the shoe, the shoe of the consumer. We can think, this is, we are going to consume this data, or we can think we are like a CIO or enterprise, right? So from a consumer standpoint, a lot of things, like navigation, for example, is one of the biggest things, right? Like where can I find Yarnin? So yesterday only, I mean, we were trying to coordinate where we are, and it took us like almost an hour, right? Because we are in a location where 11,000 people.
So you're at a conference.
Exactly.
You want to meet each other. You want to be able to pull up an app and say, can you take me to Yarnin?
Like, bring up the HP.
Exactly.
Bring up the HP conference app, and it says, you know, click here, and you walk towards each other, and you can see each other. That's a transit, you know.
And the beauty of it is, you don't need to be attached to the network. I don't need you to associate to the wireless in order for me to know where you are. It's enough, it's sufficient for me that you're receiving and answering the beacons for me to track you down.
So you can track people without any personally identifiable...
Clients. Let's call it clients, not people.
So you can track a wireless client without any personal identifier information, no MAC address. You don't need that. So you're just saying there's a node there, and it's moving around the system.
Correct.
If you now get MAC address, you can now do something to associate the MAC address with a user ID. Then you can track the user ID.
And that's where the fields become a bit more blurry in a way, because this is where regulation steps in.
Well, this
as long as I don't know who you are, that's fine. But once I start combining MAC address to an entity, a human or whatever, right?
Well, the MAC addresses are globally unique, and then all of a sudden your Wi-Fi roams from this mall, shopping mall, to this conference. They can track the fact that you're at, you know, you like buying boring middle-aged man jeans, and you're also attending the motorcycle show.
This is where, you know, regulation steps in. So.
But that's regulations more from a commercial application. From an enterprise application, this would allow us to do things like, okay, I want to apply policy to Greg. When he's over here, he's awesome, he's cool, but when he crosses this magical line and goes into R&D, his devices don't get any service at all.
When he's in the bathroom stall for far too long and then doesn't wash his hands upon egress of the restroom.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which, that's a great talking, showing me, talking to me about this.
There's an interesting one there. I actually have been asked by a CIO, can he disable Wi-Fi in the bathroom? Do you know why? Because the building was at maximum capacity and people are going into the bathroom and sitting and taking too long and they don't actually have enough stalls because the building's at full, like slightly over capacity.
Get in, do your business, and get out. Stop playing, stop doing potty tweet.
They actually just want to increase the capacity of the toilets without actually putting in extra toilets.
I'm behind in the RSS feed.
No, but Chris, you were telling me offline that you've seen demos of this and it's actually that accurate. You can tell how long they were in that bathroom, where they were at in it, and whether or not they washed their hands on the way out.
You know, there's all these great things that we can do with this, but there's definitely, and I love the psychological, the personal, how does technology affect people? That fascinates me. And that's where things are kind of go, I don't know if I want. You know? Yeah. On the other hand, when I'm shaking hands with someone, I would like them to know that I could tell.
Yeah. So there's another question.
So the last question of this is, do you put maps on web pages for me to see this?
There you go.
Do you explode, you know, are you into
is,
the
is this IMC? It? Is this, how are we so visualizing this data?
There is an IMC component, real-time location services within IMC that, you can turn this on. You can take this and actually translate this into physical data where you overlay a map on top of it and you can actually watch people walk around.
Yeah. Now, you can buy, there are services that you can buy. You go and get someone with a backpack that has a GPS receiver on the top.
Yep.
They look like something out of a 1960s sci-fi movie. I don't know if you've ever seen
No, I haven't.
They actually have a backpack and it has this antenna that goes up over their head. It has a big dish on top to try and pick up the... And you walk around and they literally will walk around the building and they get to the corner of the building, they press click. And then they walk through and then they... At every point in the building where there's a feature and they can map out the building with just these backpacks. And that's a commercial service you can rent. So if you don't have the building maps... You can build them just by a person who walks around with
all
them.
All you need is the blueprints.
The blueprints are fine. That's what we have.
Blueprints are totally fine. You just need to position your access points.
If you have them, and then to scale. They haven't been replicated to. So older buildings, so for example in London, where I am, there are no blueprints. Buildings are often, you know, built in the 1700s and been extensively redeveloped over time. And they're often not available to you. So what we do is we actually go out and hire a company to come in, and the guy walks around with a backpack and... He can map it out just by walking around with a big fancy GPS receiver that works indoors and click, 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 door frames, click, you know, and just literally walks, maps it all out, some companies are doing it now with ultrasound. So
I've heard about that too.
They walk around with walk around with an ultrasound and they can sense the walls and you just keep moving around until all the picture of the building's built up.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That is very cool.
Well, that'll give you a 3D rendering. Which I've done, so.
So IMC, then, is a module that can visualize all this. You can get in the floor plan however you're going to get the floor plan in from the things we were talking about, just traditionally.
From a product standpoint, IMC is the base platform.
Yeah.
WSM, which is the Wireless Services Manager, is the module that you would look at for doing wireless services management, period.
And this is what's going to talk to the
There is a subtle option within WSM for real-time location services, because this is something that there's... Going forward, you know, the product thing is, we'll see how that turns out. Does it get bundled in? That's a product decision. That's not mine. But right now, there's not a lot of people, and there hasn't been a lot of benefit for real-time location that may be agent-based, may require tags. It's like, for all the reasons that we've talked about, not everybody wants to pay for that up front. So that's one of the things that very, very few of the modules have a sub-license, and that's one of them.
It's just not everybody wants it.
Yeah, not everybody wants it, not everybody needs it, and not everybody wants to deal with the hassle of...
But some people are going to be absolutely fascinated by this, especially as the accuracy has gone up. You know, the commercial applications, yes, but I think employers as well, because it's going to be a tool that they can use to drive behavior or encourage certain kinds of behavior and get the most out of...
It's funny that the word policy, how often it's come up in network guys' mouths in the last 6 months, right? We've moved from, ACLs... ACLs and QAS,
Yep.
Yes, I said that out loud. And we're moving now to talking about policy and incorporating metadata from all over the environment to all these different things, which now location combined with identity combined with, you know, AD.
We assume everything's connected. Now we've got to do something with the fact that everything's connected.
Yep.
This is this service connectivity theme that I'm often banging on about. It's, you know, once upon a time, putting up a Wi-Fi and connecting something to it, that was a result. That was win, right?
Yep.
Now it's about, now I'm connected, what am I going to do with that to make it even better? And it's time to move on, and this is one of the systems where we can do that.
Hmm. So you guys are saying, I'm just going back to the how we're doing the location awareness thing here. You're saying you don't need to do the calibration. Can you give us any more insight into how you are actually doing this, getting this accuracy without the calibration?
The calibration is you know, the biggest problem that has been there in location-aware services using Wi-Fi, right? And that is why it has been extremely costly to deploy, maintain, and things like that. And I think, I mean, personally, I believe that is one of the reasons why it has not taken off. It's like I will call someone, and they will say, okay, yeah, we have a 2-meter system. They will do the calibration once. It will be 2 meters today. It will be 10 meters tomorrow. So it's
right.
Not at all robust. And the problem comes from the fundamental use of signal strength to calculate your location. Right? So essentially what most of the technologies do today is they use signal strength.
Meaning the client talking to the AP, how strong is your signal to me versus other APs that can also see that client?
Exactly. So a stronger signal strength means I'm close by, right?
Yes.
Weaker signal strength means I'm far away. And that is the kind of heuristic that most of us have been using in the past, right? Now, that doesn't really work in terms of accuracy, right? Because it depends on where you are. If you are in a very open space, you might be 20 meters away and still have a pretty good signal strength.
If you're sitting somewhere that's got, you know, a bit of concrete or metal
right.
in between you, that's really attenuating your signal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you have two or three walls behind the access point, but it might be just 10 meters away, but you have very weak signal strength.
Yeah.
Right. So it's very difficult to characterize the proximity or the distance or the location based on signal strength. And this is, so to Yanin's point, that there are two components in it, right? So one is structural. So because of the structural problem, you cannot use signal strength that easily to calculate location. And then there is a dynamic component as well. So even in an open space, like in a conference, right, if the space is completely like empty, you will get one kind of signal strength. And then if the place is full, because human bodies also absorb
yes.
a lot of RF signals, you will get a different kind of signal strength, right, at the same distance or at the same location. So it's very difficult to calibrate against these kind of dynamic factors, and signal strength is basically the cause. So so in the past, like research or you know several other companies, what they have done is they have done like more calibration, more access points, essentially throwing kind of like I'll say money at the problem, right? So let's do more calibration more frequently. Let's use like 10 access points to find your location, and things like that. So what we have done is we said that let's not look at signal strength at all, right? We will not look at signal strength at all. We'll try to devise a system which will be immune to the environment.
Okay.
Immune to the environment in a way such that if you take the same system and put it here in this smaller room or bigger room, it will work. If you take it anywhere in the world, it will just work. You just put it up, it should just work.
Sure.
There should not be any environmental effect on the
position. So what are you
system.
Using? What's the magic sauce?
So there are so we don't look at signal strength. That's the first thing we do, right? We look at like there are two components in the wireless space. So you can take attenuation, which is basically signal strength,
right?
Or you can take delay, which is like time.
Okay, yeah. I think latency,
right.
Delay.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So we are looking at delay. We are not looking at attenuation.
So you're saying the delay characteristics don't change no matter what the signal strength is because
right.
it's a distance thing.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now you're going to have pretty accurate, looking
exactly.
at delay,
exactly.
it's going to be minute differences. We're talking about speed of light here or
yeah,
very
it's speed
short
of
distances.
Exactly. But it's just not that. If you just look at delay, it's not that you're going to get a great accuracy either because there will be blockages, you know, there will be a lot of reflections. There'll be people walking around, and hence the signal characteristics will change and all that. So you have to have algorithms which will essentially, you know, calculate the delay correctly,
yeah.
right? By removing all this noise, all this interference, and things like that. And that is some of the key inventions we have made in HP Labs, that we look at the delay, but then we are not immune to some of the environmental factors which affects the delay.
Yeah.
And so this is why no one else has this technology, at least right now.
Exactly.
Because it's hard to do. This is a tough thing.
I'll hope so.
Okay, very good. Well, this is all really cool technology. This is pretty interesting stuff. If someone wants to go online and find out more about this particular wire solution, some of what you're doing, the location awareness, where can they go? Is there a URL they can go?
They can watch, there is a clip on YouTube that explains it.
Is there a specific thing they should search for, or a title? Or
search HP Location Aware. Like, there are blog posts, there are videos. Video has a demo as well, like a, so can go watch that.
And they can always, you know, reach out to their to the HP representative in their region.
Right.
Very good. And then are either of you guys active socially? Do you blog? Are you on Twitter? Any of those things where you wanted to share that information? No, I got one no and then two no's. Okay. They're going to lock you guys back up right after the show.
Well,
thank you so much for coming on the show today. Chris had to step away. He's corralling more people for us to record with, and we're going to do that very shortly, aren't we, Greg?
We are. We've got a whole day full of chatting to people.
Yes.
Hell of a lot.
chatting to boring people.
No, not boring at all. This is actually really, really great stuff.
This is really great. It's always good to... It's good to find out what's going on inside, right? And to talk about all the issues, because it helps... our audience quite often writes to us and tells us just... You know, we're asking the same questions that they would ask, because we're often discovering the same things that they want to discover anyway, and that's kind of what the show's all about. So
hopefully you liked what you heard here. This has been the Packet Pushers Podcast. If you have any more questions about the HP location awareness and want to send us an email, we'll try to get it to the right people for you, packetpushers@gmail.com. Of course, this is the Packet Pushers Podcast, available at packetpushers.net. Follow us on Twitter @packetpushers. Last but not least, remember that. Too much networking would never be enough.